You're listening to The Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 80. TRC stands for The Rubber Chickens, and you can find our writings at therubberchickensblog.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Rubber Chickens, that's R-U-B-R Chickens, and you can find us on Facebook as well. We are brought to you all during the 2015 season by our good friends at BlueMoonDisc.com, makers of the authentic Discada plow disc cooking pans, the ultimate tailgate cooking accessory. And if you visit Blue Moon Disc right now and use the promo code TRC2015 at checkout, you can receive 10% off your entire order. My name's Buck. I am joined tonight by T-Bone Only.
Only me.
Only you. We regret to inform you that G-Man has quit. I mean, he just let us know today that he is no longer a Gamecock fan. He has adopted Ohio State as his new team. He's busy getting some forged diplomas, and he told us to tell all of you to, and I quote, suck it. So I think that's a little harsh. I think, you know,
It's been a long time coming. I mean, he's been hanging on by a thread for a while, and close followers of the blog will notice that, you know, he publishes something about once every, 4 months?
Maybe.
And then, in all honesty, I'm going to out someone here right now on the podcast. The stuff that actually is published under his name, I wrote all that stuff.
He has actually never written anything on the blog.
Which makes
him telling all of our fans to suck it a little more harsh. I don't really understand why he would. No, seriously, G-Man has been doing a lot of traveling lately, and essentially his wife demanded that he spend some time with she and the kids tonight, which is a decision that I'm sure she's probably regretting right now because nobody.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
He's married?
Yes. Believe it or not, you people out there in podcast land are shocked.
Who is she?
Yeah.
Who is she?
That's what I was going to say. Nobody wants to spend too much time with that guy, I promise. We've got a weekend coming up with him in a couple of weeks, and, you know, we usually get together on Thursday night, and by lunch on Friday, we're pretty much done with him. So, we're going to miss the
lunch
G-Man.
On Thursday.
we're going to miss the G-Man. But so here we sit. We are 2 weeks into the season. We're 1-1, which prior to the season was not a completely unfathomable situation, I don't think. But I believe our poor play overall has probably made this feel so much worse. And the prospects for our season as a whole don't really look great right now. But let's talk about this game first, and then we'll get into some of the bigger issues surrounding our program after we talk about Saturday night, which got off to a great start. We pinned Kentucky deep, another Sean Kelly. I think that's the only thing we heard from Sean Kelly on Saturday night was that first punt pinning Kentucky deep, just a beautiful ball. Boozy Whitlow gets pressure on Patrick Toles. He's intercepted by Sky Moore. Connor Mitch strolls in for a touchdown, and, you know, bam, we're up 7-0. Unfortunately,
in all honesty, at that very point, I remember thinking we are going to wax these guys.
Did you really think that?
I did. I'm like, they're not going to be able to handle the home crowd.
Yeah,
our defense looks hype.
Yeah,
offense came out and looked, you know, confident in that one little play, and I thought we were going to toast them. I mean, and we had history on our side at that point, too.
Yeah.
You know, we had almost always beaten Kentucky badly at Williams-Brice, so I was pretty optimistic at that point.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Kentucky sliced through us like warm bread for most of the rest of the first half and took a 24-7 lead into halftime, and it was very reminiscent to me of the Texas A&M game last year, the combination of how how they were picking up just chunks of yardage combined with how bad our tackling was, which was really capped off by a little swing pass to Boom Williams for Kentucky, and we had four or five guys between him and the first down marker, and he got the first down. And that was it was just so many flashbacks to last year. So during the first half, we also lost Connor Mitch to a separated shoulder and some really weird hip infection from a hip pointer that he had last week. So he just got out of the hospital today. So that's, you know, infections are not anything to screw around with, but I'm wondering how they didn't catch this before, you know, before he went out there to play.
The only reason is, I mean, you got to kind of step back and think about how much pressure this guy had to be under. I think he was probably hurting and hurting bad, and I think he was probably not reporting that he was hurting and hurting bad.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to play.
And yeah, definitely.
It was only when they went and looked at the other stuff, they're like, hey, Cat, you're running a fever.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah, maybe we need to get you to the hospital. Maybe we ought to get you on some antibiotics. So, anyway, Perry Orth and Lorenzo Nunez saw action the rest of the way. Nunez only got a few snaps. Second half was a completely different story. We shut Kentucky down, holding them to, I don't know what the final total was, but I think it was, at one point it was 92 yards, like really close to the end of the game.
Yeah.
I don't know if they finished with less than 100 for the half or not, but, and while our offense moved the ball, we had to settle for way too many field goal attempts. And as you all know, once we did score a touchdown, our most reliable player, Farrow Cooper, fumbled and it was returned for a two-point conversion, which I guess I've probably seen that before. I've definitely seen a blocked kick. I mean, we've done that. We did that against Nebraska in the bowl game a few years ago. But I don't know that I've seen anybody go for a two-point conversion and have
it
returned.
It's really hard to come back against some guys when you're way down, when you're scoring four-point touchdowns. That's a difficult
– Right.
Difficult – you got to score a lot of four-point touchdowns.
Yeah, so we're down 26-22. We did get the ball back, and Perry Orth, despite having a pretty doggone good game, threw a bad interception that pretty much sealed the game. Then we, for once in the second half, we couldn't stop Kentucky. So that was it. 26-22, the Gamecocks fall to 1-1. Overall impressions of the game, I mean, besides walking away feeling like you were, you know, had just been punched in the gut, anything stand out to
you? Yeah, it's, you know, without pulling back even further and talking about kind of the state of the program, just impressions of the game is your question. And the impression I had was that effort was an issue some in the first half. I don't think effort was a problem at all in the second half on either side of the ball. So that was somewhat encouraging. But this is the second week in a row that we've had these tale of two halves games, and I don't get that.
Yeah,
it was the second week in a row that Kentucky had had that. Kentucky had the same thing the week prior, so I don't know. And that brings me back to a point you mentioned where we shut down Kentucky's offense. I've thought about that in the intervening couple of days, and did we, or did they go in a shell? You know, did they really shut it down trying to protect the lead? And I'm not really sure about it.
Well, on back-to-back possessions, they had holding calls on, I think it was on first down both times. So they were starting behind schedule. You know, they were first and 20 on back-to-back possessions, and that's hard to come back from. So they shot themselves in the foot. You know, credit our guys for making plays, but
making tackles.
Yeah. Everybody, the defense did look really good. Our cornerbacks tightened up on their wide receivers. You know, it was much better. And the end of the game, you know, Brandon Wilds made the comment, what's wrong with the offense? Well, I didn't get the ball enough. Hey, man, I love that.
Exactly. He went from probably my third favorite Gamecock on this current team to one of my all-time favorite Gamecocks with that comment. Because that's the kind of attitude that you need. We need more of that attitude, not less.
Right.
And it sounded like Spurrier was not upset about it at all.
No, I don't think so. I think he appreciated it. But like, you know, Wilds has earned his stripes. I mean, he's a fourth year senior. He's played considerably since his freshman year. You know, he's now the number one back and probably the leader of this offense. With all due respect to Pharaoh, I think Wilds has probably got a little more in his war chest than Pharaoh does.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, and this is kind of getting into the nitty gritty of the game a little bit, critiquing it, the complete absence of playmakers, particularly at wide receiver, I think is leading to some of these red zone issues. It's also leading to things like Pharaoh's fumble. You know, when you got a superstar on a team and he doesn't have a lot of good supporting cast, you're going to give him the ball too much. You're going to give him the ball in the red zone too much. You're going to put him in positions where he's going to get hit by, you know, everybody in the world keying on him. And that may have led to that fumble. I'm really, really worried and concerned about why we don't have any wideouts. And where that's leaving Pharaoh.
None.
I mean, and that's what's going wrong in the red zone. They know, okay, they're either going to run the zone read or they're going to throw it to this guy. That's our red zone offense.
So Hurd caught a ball, and one of the other wide receivers caught a ball. I can't remember, but I it's easy to point
Guger,
out.
Guger.
Did Guger catch one the other night? See, I didn't think
he Guger caught one. He caught one on a seam route.
Okay. So I seem to remember two wide receivers having catches the other night. But where's DJ Neal? Where's Jalen Christian? Or is it Jared Washington? Jared Washington is the one who broke his leg, right? I get those two mixed up.
I think so. Right.
Yeah. And this kind of goes to the conversation we'll have a little later in the podcast about talent. I mean, Kentucky had number two for Kentucky. I'm like, hey, I'll take that guy. As a matter of fact, I would have taken their top three wide receivers. Hey, come on over.
Well, you know? In a bitter irony that whenever this happens, I'm the one that usually comments on it, and I didn't this time. Blake Bone from Woodruff, South Carolina, a guy we did not want, would have been starting at one of our wide receiver positions, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked good out there in the uniform. I don't know what our problem with Blake Bone was. But we didn't want him from right here in Woodruff, and he went to Kentucky, and now he's 2-0 against us.
And just as a side note, KJ Brent, who for whatever reason decided, either he decided he didn't want to be at South Carolina anymore, or someone encouraged him to pursue other opportunities, you know, caught, what, six passes for 90-something yards and a touchdown at Wake Forest?
And a touchdown.
Saturday? Yeah.
That cat would be starting for us right now.
Oh, easily.
I mean, the way he runs.
Easily.
Balls. Yeah.
So, who knows what happened there. Anyway, it's a second consecutive loss to Kentucky not too long after 10 straight over those guys. And, you know, rightfully, we probably didn't deserve a 10-game winning streak over Kentucky. I mean, we're not that, you know. There aren't many 10-game winning streaks for anybody over anybody in the SEC. I mean, Georgia doesn't have a 10-game winning streak over Vandy right now, so...
Yeah, if you go back and look at the history, especially those games up in Lexington, we stole a couple of games up in Lexington in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's not that big of a deal. But whenever you lose two times to someone, it starts feeling like maybe they moved over in the fast lane and passed you.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I had a little bit of an exchange with Jonathan Reynolds with Reynolds and Gunter radio show, I guess. I'm in Atlanta, so I never get to listen to these shows. But he was pretty adamant about South Carolina having more talent than Kentucky. And I challenged that. I said, well, I don't think that's true anymore. And he said, why would you say that? And I said, well, you know, 45 to 38 and 26 to 24 or 26 to 22 for starters. You know, you get beat twice in a row by that team. And I looked out on the field and I didn't see a big discrepancy. I mean, their quarterback was better. Their wide receivers were better. Right. Running back was probably a push. Offensive and defensive lines were probably a push. Linebackers, maybe we've got an edge. Our defensive backfield, you want to talk about a liability. I don't know what our corners are doing out there. You know who, now that Al Harris Jr. has switched to number 7. Do you know who he makes me think of? Is, remember when Addison Williams got so many snaps because we had nobody else?
Seven?
He wore number 7. Yes. Addison Williams, man, he gave up some big, big catches. And when I see Al Harris, I just think Addison Williams. Because Addison Williams was a little.
What number did Kevin House wear? Did Kevin House wear 25?
He was 29. He was number 29.
29.
I can still picture him getting that interception against Alabama to seal that game.
Mm-hmm.
But we made fun of him quite a bit over the years, too.
Yes, we did.
So I'll tell you who my Rubber Chicken award, my Blue Moon Disc Rubber Chicken award goes to this week, and it's a guy that we have not mentioned. I don't know that we've mentioned him on the show ever, is Taylor Stallworth. He was the one guy on the defensive line that I saw being really disruptive over and over, particularly in the second half. So coming back from a torn pectoral muscle, I believe. So,
That's apparently a thing.
He looked like he played a pretty darn good game. So I'm going to give my rubber chicken to Taylor Stallworth.
Well, I've got a couple. First, I have right here in this envelope a
little David Letterman there.
Yes. mailed to me by the G-Man shortly after the game had finished. He knew he wouldn't be here tonight, so he mailed to me his rubber chicken. And I'm going to open up the envelope and see who he's giving it to. He's giving it to the entire defensive line because he always does something like that.
He just can't pick one guy. He can't even pick a small position group. He's got to go to the entire defensive line.
Right. The entire defensive line. And I think he's in his scribble, it looks like he's saying in the second half. But anyway, classic G-Man. But I'm going to give it to Perry Martinet Andropov Cornelius Orth.
Is that his full name? Is that what he's got on his
birth certificate? Yeah, that's really his full name, strangely enough. Andropov. You wouldn't expect that. But coming off the bench, slinging the ball, the kid's wind up takes a really long time.
Yeah.
If you noticed, he really has to put some ump on it. But what he does that I like is he says, the play's going here, I'm throwing the ball there.
Very Dylan Thompson-esque.
Yes, the window may be non-existent, but that cat is going to sling the ball. And, that's about what we're left with now. We're left with a puncher's chance in several of these games coming up. And so we need a guy like Perry that's just going to sling the ball. And so he gets my rubber chicken.
Yeah. So I was hard on Connor Mitch. I've pretty much been hard on him since he's been visible, since he's gotten playing time. And I hate that the guy got hurt, but I'm gonna have a hard time seeing him win that starting job back. I mean, at least the way Orth looked against Kentucky, if he can play at least that well against some of these other teams, Mitch is going to have a hard time getting back in the lineup. Or if Lo Nunez comes in and we start running, a whole bunch of read option and, maybe he sneaks a pass in here and there and find out that that offense works for us. So when you're out 6 weeks, you're not going to step right back in and take over against, Tennessee or whoever that is.
And in an offense that is apparently devoid of playmakers.
Right.
Other than Pharaoh, you got to take some chances. And I think we're going to see the wrappers come completely off Nunez. Probably something like, I don't know how the game's going to go, but we're not too talking about that yet. But I expect that it's going to be something like third series or first series of the second quarter, something like that. It's time to go to that kind of plan with him.
Yeah.
They didn't do that last year. We didn't do it last year, and we're seeing the problems with that this year. So I'm hoping the coaching staff's going to go ahead and say, yep, time to start, to schedule some time for him.
Yeah. So the, now that you mention it, the other guy, my milk carton guy of the week, last week it was Bryson Allen Williams. This week it's another Williams, David Williams. Saw today that the new depth chart came out, and now he's behind Sean Carson. He's third And he was, a lot of people were saying, hey, you know, by a certain point in the season, he's going to take over the number one job with Brandon Wiles. Maybe this is a motivational tactic or something, but he has been less than impressive. He looked good in the Clemson game last year. I thought, man, I can't wait to get this guy some more touches next season. But he's another one of these guys. He just runs straight to the tackler, it seems like. And as big a dude as he is, he's not breaking tackles, and he, as fast as he is, he's not making people miss. And I'm just disappointed that we haven't gotten more out of him so far. But thank God for Brandon Wiles anyway. So state of the program, I think. There have been some pretty big discussions about that, at least on Twitter and the internet, and even nationally. I've seen some articles about Spurrier and is this it? I wrote on Sunday night, and I had a long time to think about. Usually snap judgments are just about the ball game, you know, that we just experienced, and I just felt really strongly that I should lead with, you know, kind of a state of the program statement. And it's not good. I mean, it's not good at all. I think we're seeing a worst case scenario at this point, because this was supposed to be a bounce back year, even against a very, very difficult schedule. But if this was going to be a bounce back year, you can't play the way we did against North Carolina. Now, in retrospect, we're happy to get out of there with a win. And then you can't lose to Kentucky. You just can't. Because if you look at the schedule, South Carolina's schedule for the rest of the year, we are going to be underdogs in, I mean, today we would definitely be underdogs in six games. So if we lose all those games where we're underdogs, there's seven losses and no bowl game right there. So... and we've said all along that if Spurrier, you know, and Spurrier has said this before, if we're not competitive or if we're not moving forward, then I'm going to hang it up. I don't need to coach anymore if we're going, you know, 6-6 and 5-7. And I would hate for him to go out on a, you know, his first losing season since – what, his first season at Duke or something? I mean, he's never had a losing season at South Carolina. I don't think he ever had one at Florida. I would hate for that to be the way it ends for him, but it's hard to imagine a scenario where it doesn't end that way right now. And I surprised it. You know, when I wrote that and I published it, I thought I was certain I would get a certain amount of pushback, and I got no pushback from anybody. I mean, I think... I think it's starting to kind of wash over the fan base. We're seeing this come to an end.
Yeah, and what you're seeing happening here, I think, is it's an old cliche, the five stages of grief. You know, and the first is denial, and I think we were in denial for a good bit of last year. Anger, you've seen some anger this time, you know. And then where does it go from there? Bargaining. We probably did some bargaining. We're probably still doing some bargaining when we're talking about how the rest of this season.
It's like, we might be able to squeeze out seven wins.
Right. And you never know. We've beaten Georgia several times in a row, and Tennessee's overdue for, you know, letdown, and LSU, who knows what they got. You know, that's
Missouri's not that good. Come on, give us a Missouri game.
Bargaining. And let me invite you all to bathe in the dark cesspool of depression. Step four in the five stages of grief, which is where I am. The reality is there's not going to be suddenly a bunch of talent on this team. If you look on the depth chart, there's not a bunch of young guys chomping at the bit. If they were, they'd be out there. I don't want to sound like Dennis Green or whatever, but we are what we are. And it's going to play out. And just kind of what I've been thinking about, though, and looking at that, and the kind of the big point of the program is it's time to rebuild. It was probably time to rebuild last year. And I'm rebuilding, I'm talking about the staff. But to quote a recent divorce by one of my celebrity crushes, Jewel Kilcher, her and her husband, Ty, are involved in what they call the thoughtful, tender undoing of their relationship. And I think it's time for us to have a thoughtful, tender undoing of our relationship with the head ball coach. He's taken us places that we could have never gone without him.
Right.
I think he was the only guy that could have done the job that he did. And he probably made the mistake that a lot of people make, which is staying a day or two too long. You know, I've been at many a party where my better half is trying to pull me away because I've kind of stayed a little too long.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going on. I think that's what's going on. And I think we need to just chill out about the way this year is going to play out. Pull forward, guys, and hope for the best and hope for something big, but recognize that Spurrier's gotten more than his share of wins out there. He's going to be fine. We don't need to cry for Spurrier. And at the end of the day, this is probably the undoing of this era. And it's been worth it. I'd make the deal from the beginning. So I'm still kind of in depression and not to acceptance, but I would say that's my denouement, to use a big word.
What is it called? Undoing? Is that a legal term, or is that the term that they used?
That's the term they used. Thoughtful, tender undoing.
Thoughtful, tender undoing. Okay. Yes. I need to write that. That's going to be the title of this podcast. Thoughtful, tender undoing. You know, you make a good point. If you go back to December of 2004, and, you know, somebody puts a piece of paper in for you, in front of you, and says, you know, the first 5 years are going to be kind of up and down. Then you're going to win an SEC title. Then you're going to win 33 games in 3 years before things kind of fall apart. I don't even think we think about the falling apart years.
No, you know? Sign me up.
We don't
gonna
like
it. Going to be Clemson five years in a row? Sign me up.
You know, we don't like it. And we've been – I can't think of too many times we've been overly critical of Spurrier you know, maybe after a game, man, he called a terrible game, or, you know, man, what a dumb use of timeouts or things like that. But, you know, don't get us wrong. The guy has done more as a head coach for South Carolina than probably all of the other head coaches combined. You know, he's just taken us places we've only dreamed of, but he couldn't get us over that final hump. You know, I will personally always look back at those, you know, that loss to a bad Auburn team and that loss to a bad Tennessee team that kept us out of the Georgia Dome. And, you know, it may sound pie in the sky, maybe even a shot at a national title, you know. I mean, those,
right.
But still, just great times with Spurrier, but it's, again, hard to see a scenario this season that ends with him being our head coach. I think we're going to be looking for a head coach in December. So,
I think you're right. And that brings us to a very apropos Twitter question.
A quitter question
from Billy Kohler, always smart, always timely Billy Kohler. That's at Billy KOEHLER. Your wish list for the next coach. Qualities, not candidates.
So I have a hard time giving you qualities without giving you, well, not candidates, but other head coaches to look at. The guy that keeps coming to mind for me is Hugh Freeze. I would personally like an offensive-minded coach. I would like a guy who runs the fast pace. I'm bought in to the Chip Kelly, the Chad Morris, the Hugh Freeze, you know, just wide open. Let's go out and score 40. Let's go out and outscore our opponents. You know, let's score 40 or 50.
You can be a purist. You can be a purist if you want to. You can hate the way it looks, but it's the way the game is going, and we got to get on board.
Right.
So I agree with you.
So you know, I'd love a young guy who has, I would like a guy who's probably in his early to mid 40s, because I want somebody who is ours, maybe 50. T-Bone, do you say in 50, maybe?
Yeah, I'm giving you the hand signals. It's either the hand signals for 50 or it's that play call signal that the Eagles sent in the other day.
Right. So, and just a recruiting, somebody who is non-stop on the recruiting trail, and get mad at me if you want to, but man, Dabo. Give me a guy with Dabo's salesman qualities, because he, hate him or hate him worse, he's getting so much talent up there at Clemson. How is he getting, the best dual threat quarterback out of the state of Georgia? How's he getting the best offensive tackle in the country out of the state of Georgia? How's he get Sammy Watkins and Deion Kane out of Florida? Lord have mercy. What is he selling up there?
Well, here's the thing is that he doesn't have as much to sell as we do.
Right.
We're just able to get by with a lot less effort. 20 years ago, it wasn't this way. During our time at South Carolina, it wasn't this way. We all knew there were huge gaps. There are not any gaps anymore. We're making $20 million more a year in our athletic program than they are, and we're going to be for the next 10 or 15 years.
Right.
We've got nothing but good product to sell. And we've got the facilities. We've got a degree now of actually legitimacy within the conference. We can sell stuff that Clemson can't sell. And yet, Clemson outworks us. And it's because recruiting is a little bit easier at South Carolina now. And I think we need to get used to that. So I agree with you. We had a guy that was really busted it, a guy that was organized and emphasized it. And I think about a story I heard a friend of mine who played some ball told me, and he was talking about missing it. And he said, you know what I miss is everything that happened between the stands, and I don't miss any other part of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's exactly the way Spurrier is. That is the way we need to think of Spurrier. The stuff that happens on the field, he could do that stuff till he was 100.
Right.
But it's all the other stuff that he just doesn't have the time for anymore. He doesn't have the energy for anymore. We can love him and still say that. So the characteristic I want a salesman. I want a CEO salesman who is committed to fast-paced offense, excitement and energy and organization. Too long now we've been running by the seat of our pants and just assuming that he was going to call us a great game. And you know what? A lot of times he does. But that's not a long-term plan. So those are the qualities I'm looking for.
And I will say one more thing about the recruiting thing about Clemson going back to Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. You want to look at the model. People say, well, you're in South Carolina. It's a small state. You don't have that much population. Therefore, you don't have that many great players, and you have to go out and say, what is Ole Miss? Think about all the parallels. Ole Miss is really close to Memphis, but relatively speaking, we're really close to Atlanta, which is where we're getting a lot of our talent from. They have an in-state rival that they have to compete with for talent. They don't have
a Cal College, no less. A Cal College,
right.
No less.
They don't have tremendous history unless you want to go back to the 50s. I mean, they're not their tradition is. Not that much greater than ours. They're known for bow ties and tailgating. So why can't we be Ole Miss?
I'll take it a step further. This is right. This is beyond the scope of this conversation. But I have always said, if the SEC had any sense, they would be our cross division rival. I mean, right now their cross division rival is Vandy, I think.
Okay,
but we have more in common with Ole Miss. I don't know why they keep sticking us with Arkansas and Texas A&M and people that we have no natural affinity to. Our college and Ole Miss's college look alike, kind of feel alike, and have the similar qualities. I agree with you. And so we can do what they can do.
Yeah. So I'm going to back up to a couple of questions I saw. Connor Tapp says, how much of his staff does Saban bring with him from Bama? So when people start putting their wish lists out there and actual names, it's funny. We've joked about these two. We've joked about how Saban is these rumors that he's unhappy at Alabama and the fan base, and he's
chomping at the bit.
And it's like, man, wouldn't it be cool if Spurrier retired and Saban comes to South Carolina and Dabo goes to Alabama?
Right.
I tell you who I don't want. What's his defensive coordinator? Kirby Smart. I don't. You know, you keep hearing his name in conjunction with our program when Spurrier leaves. I don't know about that, but and Chip Kelly. You know, we had some fun on Twitter last night with the Chip Kelly situation because, you know, he did some stuff this summer to piss off a whole lot of Philadelphia fans. And if it doesn't pay off in wins and losses, you know, he might not be in Philadelphia very long. And, man, wouldn't that be a perfect fit? But anyway,
if you get him, here's a question while we're doing the thoughtful and tender undoing of our coaching staff.
Yeah.
Who would you keep? You know, there's always the guy or two that you hang around.
Oh, I would.
The transitions.
GA and Sean Elliott. I'd have a hard time not keeping both those guys. I like both of them a lot. You know, there were times that we thought that one of those two guys might be our head coach when Spurrier leaves. But
And I'll tell you, if he walks away after that Wisconsin game and hangs it up, we might be looking at one of those cats.
Coach Elliott.
We might be looking at Coach Elliott, and then GA is the offensive coordinator. But that's not what he did.
Chris Phillips, CPhilly19, says, would you take South Carolina plus 17.5? I don't think I would. As a matter of fact, I live and work in Atlanta, and I've got a lot of Georgia fans in my office, and I've actually been telling all of them for $5, I'll take Georgia minus 17. And none of the Georgia fans have taken me up on that offer, even as bad as the Georgia fans have been, you know, they've been poor mouthing their win over Vandy. So I don't know. I mean, I think we lose that game something along the lines of 34-10, something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. And I think that what you're seeing from the Georgia fans is that they've been burned on the Spurrier stove so many times that they're not going to reach over there with their hand anytime soon. So they don't know. They haven't seen us either. They're going to get yards in chunks.
Right.
I mean, they're running backs, and we don't need to talk too much about their running backs, I guess, given what Twitter's been doing today.
Yeah.
But maybe we do need to talk about it. I don't know. But they're going to kill us. I wouldn't take the bet. I wouldn't take it.
So Michael Bohlin, B-O-H-L-I-N, this M-B-O-H-L-I-N 247, 24/7, excuse me. So he covers NBA, Georgetown hoops for 24/7 sports. And he says, is Steve Spurrier turning into the Gary Williams of college football, one national title, well-respected by his peers, hates recruiting? Well, if that's... That's a pretty good description. That's a pretty good description of Gary Williams or of Steve Spurrier. So, yeah, maybe so. Good friend Adam Garrett, Life of a Gamecock, says, why do we suck again?
Recruiting. I think we've been talking about that.
Yeah. Brandy C. Mills says, if I made a Nick Chubb shirt, what would it say? How about Chubb?
I think what this technically says, if I had made a Nick Chubb shirt or something.
She's never been great at grammar, I'll be honest with you. But if I had like a made a.
So, if I had a made a Nick Chubb shirt, hee hee.
Well, so I said.
I can't do more either.
I said Chubb thumping. You remember the song Tub Thumping?
Tub Thumping. I think it's simpler than that. If you made a Nick Chubb shirt, you'd just say, got Chubb? ?
Yeah, that's good too.
I think that's what you do.
One of our favorite Twitter follows, Dr. Gamecock, says, would Bubba Spurrier be hired as a recruiting coordinator or wide receiver coach for any other team in the league? I don't think he's a very well-respected guy, to be honest with you. So I don't think so.
He might get on a staff somewhere if they're having a coaching changeover. I can see him being a wide receiver coach somewhere, but I do not see him being a. I mean, his reputation as a recruiter has to be bad.
Yeah,
has to be.
Yeah. What else you got there?
Let's see. We got Jonathan Chavis at FOR Chavis. Don't know whether or not he's related to South Carolina native John Chavis, but could be defensive coordinator at Texas A&M.
Formerly
Do you LSU. Have Chad, formerly OSU, formerly Tennessee, but never, ever South Carolina?
Never.
Do you have Chad Morris or Lane Kiffin's phone number? And it's a funny story there. I actually have both of those phone numbers, but I can't tell you why.
So, yeah, Chad Morris is an intriguing name. He fits a lot of those qualities that we talked about earlier, you know, from a younger guy, runs the up-tempo offense, got a lot of energy, good recruiter, you know, who knows? Lane Kiffin, I don't know. Our history with him, I can't imagine him ever becoming the head coach at South Carolina. But
I don't know. I'm not ready to talk names yet because I want to be respectful and tender as we go through this undoing.
Thanks, Ray. Kunal Das sent us a tweet earlier in the day as we talk about talent. I believe this is a screen capture from the Georgia game in 2010, and here are our defensive backs. Safety, Devontae Holloman. Cornerback, Stephon Gilmore. Free safety, DJ Swearinger. Cornerback, Chris Culliver. And spur, Antonio Allen. What do those five guys all have in common? T-Bone?
Three letters. NFL.
Right. That was a supremely talented defensive backfield. And that probably out of the ordinary talented defensive backfield. But who on our team, in the defensive backfield has NFL talent today? Maybe Isaiah Johnson. I haven't seen enough of him to really tell. He hasn't made I've seen him running around making tackles. We talked about him a little bit, how he was a little bit wild out there. But our corners, no. I mean, Jordan Diggs, is he? I mean, he's kind of a hybrid. I don't know.
There's no question that we don't have any of those guys on this defense. And that tells you a lot right there. I mean, because we recruited those guys onto our defense when we were, a 7-6 ball club, an 8-5 ball club, a team that could go and lose to UConn. We recruited those guys back then. And after we go 11-2 for three straight years, we recruit the guys we've got now. Right. And that should give everybody pause.
Right. Yeah, just unable to take advantage of those salad days.
As it were.
All right. Well, I think that's it. I mean, we could talk about our neighbors to the north.
There's one more.
Oh, one more question.
One more question. Jeff Kahrs, at Jeff, K-A-H-R-S.
Oh, yeah.
Good longtime follower. Hey, Rubber Chickens, what good news is there in Gamecock Land?
G-Man caught about 20 redfish over the last 2 days, and they were all huge. I wish we could share pictures with you. So, but I don't know that really qualifies as good news across Gamecock land. That's only one Gamecock who really had a good couple of days fishing. So, I don't know. Basketball season is soon. I don't know.
If you don't follow the Sand volleyball team on Twitter, you're cheating yourself. I'll say that.
I mean,
I think this is soccer season, isn't it? I don't know.
The Sand volleyball Twitter account and Instagram are always outstanding follows. So jump on those. We're just not going to talk about Clemson. They've got Louisville Thursday night. We're recording this on Tuesday night. Louisville stinks. Notre Dame just lost their starting quarterback for the season. It's all in the hands of Georgia Tech. Florida State has looked relatively putrid in their first two games. But I'm a little afraid of what Clemson's gonna be able to do here.
The talk up here, and amongst all the fan base is how awesome Louisville is. How a signature win that will be Thursday night
against the 0-2 Cardinals of Louisville.
You can't reason with these people. Yeah, you really can't.
people.
It's so very painful.
Well, you know what? I mean, this has been a little bit cathartic. I mean, I needed to talk to somebody about this, and I'm glad I was able to talk to all you folks. I hope we made sense, and I hope we didn't sound too down and depressing. And it's just the reality of the situation that we're in today, and it's not something we saw coming 2 years ago. I think we probably saw it coming last year, but we were, you know, a little hopeful that we could turn things around.
This is what it looks like when you make, you know, a hire like we made, and you give a guy the keys to the car and you tell him you're going to drive the car until you can't even see well enough to drive anymore.
Right.
This is what it was always going to be. And we don't have to like it, but you know, we need to chill out. This season's going to suck, and we got everything in the world to offer. He made this a good job. We'll get a good hire. And hopefully Ray will get out there and give us a young, energetic cat, and we'll start putting it together. So I'm just going to kind of take my lumps, and that's what I recommend all of us do, and we'll be good.
And I will say this one thing I was thinking about today. I had somebody tweeted at me, "Oh boy, how soon we forget 1-21. And here's the thing. That was 15 years ago. All right. That is no longer a crutch. Gamecock fans, let me tell you, don't ever bring that up in conversation with anybody. Let other people bring that up. There's a lot of water has gone under the bridge since 1-21. Like I said earlier, we've won the SEC East. We finished in the top 10. Don't put a cap on your expectations for our football program because of something that happened, you know, well over a decade ago.
And don't ever suggest that we deserve it. That's what I always get from people about, oh, you forget 1-21, you forget 0-11. Like, that's where we naturally belong. This is not the same program it was when that happened.
Yeah.
It took Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier to change it, but they did. We're not that program anymore. And I agree with you. That's long gone.
Yep. That's a good way to end it. That's the good news in Gamecock Nation, is we're better than this.
There you go.
Our expectations are higher. Our demands are greater. So go out there and kick some backside, Gamecock fans. Fired up now. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. We got Georgia on Saturday. Hoping against hope, we'll have some good news to share next week. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. For T-Bone, I am Buck. We are the Rubber Chickens. We'll talk to you later.